American in lifestyle, global in spirit, Indian at heart. You're listening to Desi Tea Talks.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of Desi Tea Talks. It's me, Aishwarya, Manasi and Parija, and we are bringing another fun episode of our podcast series. Before we move forward, please like, subscribe our challenge that keeps us going, that keeps us motivating to produce more content. So girls, actually, I wanted to talk to you about this, what happened to me today, and why not discuss as a podcast topic, brown girls at workforce and the kinds of things we go through. Just as today, I happen to have a very interesting experience of mansplaining. Has anybody here ever experienced that?
Yes.
Not a lot, actually.
Okay, I think maybe it's just been too often, or because of maybe people are due to COVID, maybe people are sitting at home and pissed off. But off late, I've seen this trend come so often where people go in and say, oh, Aisha meant this, Aisha meant that. And like, I'm going on in a meeting and somebody just goes in and stops me and then explains the thing again. It just bothers me, and it bothered me so much at work today. So I just thought, let's talk about it. What are some of the challenges we all face as women of color in the task force? Manasi, do you want to start something about your experiences?
Oh gosh, there's so many issues with that, right? I'm actually in a very niche industry. As you may know, I'm an environmental consulting and I'm an environmental engineer. There's really not a lot of women in this particular industry in general. So you can imagine the kinds of things I could be going through. I work, especially when I first started, I was in the field a lot. So I was dealing with a lot of these, you know, vendors, construction workers, contractors, and these kinds of people who just, not to be biased, but they don't have that attitude towards women that they can take physical activity, they can, you know, deal with, you know, things that are like hands-on. So I definitely struggled a little bit in the beginning, wherein, you know, to express my authority, where it was just hard to be heard. You know, I'm a woman of color, but also a small woman, right? So it's really easy for people to just ignore me unless I make myself heard. So that was like a big challenge for me, just being in the workforce. But in general, I feel like things have changed so drastically. I feel like we're blessed in the sense that at least careers are important to us and it's not a taboo anymore.
Yeah.
Can you imagine back in the day, how women had to struggle to be able to even work, whether they wanted to or not, an option was not provided. At least an option is being provided to us now, or is available to us now. We just have to seize it, right? So I kind of wanted to touch base on that a little bit first. Like, what do you think, you know, how it was for the women back then, whether of color or not? You know, obviously, women of color just generally being from, you know, less developed countries, it was, the trend caught on much later. So it's common in women of color to have those problems, especially back in the day. And I wanted to kind of give like a very uncommon example in terms of that. My grandmother, may she rest in peace, but she pretty much was a single mother to four children. She was from a small town in India and she left her husband. It's a long story, but she basically left her husband and it's a long story about that, but she moved to the city, to Mumbai, which is a big city, on her own with four kids in tow, and she worked her entire, well, almost her entire life as a school teacher, which was so very uncommon. You know, just the taboo of leaving your husband was such a big deal. But secondly, to travel to a whole different city and start your own life there, like she single-handedly was successful in educating, very well educating all four of her children. My father being the most educated of them. Obviously, you know, once you start getting education, you learn the importance of educating others. So, you know, my parents both were working my entire life. My mom was working her entire life. I think it was more out of necessity than out of just wanting to work, I think, for her. But because my grandmother took that leap and took that step towards, you know, achieving like a modern world for us, we were able to get there. We've come so far. So, you know, kudos to her and kudos to women like her who led the initiative for us to kind of just walk into their paths and made it easier for us to be able to just be able to work now. So do you guys, you know, I'm sure you guys have examples like that too, but what do you think? How has it changed since then?
So true. And, you know, kudos to your grandma, actually. I see all of your cool strength coming on. You got it in your jeans, huh? So, you know what? So true. Back in the day, women did not have the opportunity to think about career. Just the fact that they could work or not was always dependent upon, oh, are my parents allowing it? Okay. Or is my husband allowing it? It was never about you yourself doing it. Funny story, my mom's dream as a kid was, I want to be able to go out and work. Like, she just wanted that whole look and the fashion of holding a purse and going out and working. I'm like, really? Like, you never thought about becoming something? Or it's so different now. Now we have all these many dreams and ambitions, and I want to do this. I want to have a business of my own. I want to grow so much in my career. But these things, and we are blessed. We are a very blessed generation. Coming from a South Asian country, we have the opportunities which probably our parents or our grandparents never had, and they had to fight for it. So I 100% agree with that feeling. Things are changing. Like I said, not many people were working back in the day, right? So people keep talking about, oh, how there are not so many women CEOs or not so many women leaders. That's because women actually never were a part of task force. Just give them the opportunity to be in the task force and then have it compete, right? So yeah, that's it's a good change. How about you, Parita?
Like you girls know, and a lot of our listeners know too, that I'm a tennis coach by profession, and I've spent almost 3/4 of my life so far on the tennis court. And a female working on the tennis court was never an option. I cannot say never an option, but it was a rare option, you know. So me as a player, I never played under a female coach because there were no female coaches at that point. There were only male coaches everywhere. So even to think about working as a female coach was a big thing. And especially a brown girl in America working as a tennis coach, which was like, I feel like the rest of the family, my family is still in shock that how do I manage to still work as a tennis coach? So it's very different because in sports industry, period, you know, like female coaches are not, they're not that many. And a couple of reasons is because sports being so physically demanding, you know, like women eventually give up because they like to plan families and they like to, you know, be more of a family lady. And obviously sports does not allow that because the working hours with sports are so different and just the physical thing that's needed. And all of a sudden you can be injured and you can be on the bed for like 6 months. So just thinking all of those things in terms of like income and physical work and everything, female coaches overall is not a very common thing. So I kind of faced that a little bit because like I worked in multiple regions in America and there have always been less female coaches. So I always felt it more like a perk for myself than like a challenge because I really did not have much competition anywhere. So it kind of felt good, but I also did not ever have a feeling of what it feels like to compete with another woman all the time. Or like maybe one woman is fine, but like not like 10 women. So In Pittsburgh, actually, I work for the club, which is owned and led by a woman. And I'm so fortunate for that because it's a $1 million club. And my boss, like, she's one amazing lady. She's just 36 years old and she owns this big club. And she's probably one of the first ladies I know actually owns and leads a big, you know, like very high performance endurance athletic club. So I don't think I've ever saw that in India before. So the difference that we were talking about is like, you know, how hard it was for women earlier to compare to now. I see a huge change in that.
Yeah, I mean, between the two of you, I see you guys are in a very different, unique niche industries, environmental sciences, and then being a sports person. I face those challenges being in IT, which is supposed to be one of the most progressed, most ahead in the game with all the diversity and inclusion, right? And I cannot imagine the challenges you girls have at your workforces.
Funny thing, This was about 2 years ago. I just moved to Pittsburgh and I had a job interview. I was looking for tennis club jobs. And I got a job at a high school for being a boys tennis coach. So I went for this interview. You know, the athletic director was like, oh, it's all the senior boys. There are going to be 12 boys in the team and you're going to be their coach. So my first question was by him was like, how do you feel about it? And I was like, these are senior boys who are probably like 16, 17 year olds. I wasn't even 30 at that point. And I was like, there's not much age difference, but obviously I was feeling a little weird about it, but I was so damn confident in my interview that I absolutely nailed it. So he asked me that, the only question he asked me is like, how are you going to gain respect from these boys? And if I was able to answer that question, I had the job. So my answer was pretty simple, that I'm not going to talk to them much. I'm just going to show them on the tennis court what I can do and what I cannot do. And he goes, that's it, you're hired. So it was very interesting for me because he did not ask me anything about my background or anything. But the very first thing he asked me is that, how are you going to get respect from these teenage boys? And I'm like, wow, like I wasn't prepared for that question at all, because he was going to ask me about my background or my achievements or experience, blah, blah, blah. But since then, my attitude towards work has changed a lot.
Well, good for you, Parija. And, you know, I agree, respect is such a hard thing to demand or even get from people, because especially being a woman, whether of color or not, there is the general nature of men. Even after so many generations, after so many years, we still face that. I still face that on a day-to-day basis. I've had, you know, personal issues with people who just want to talk to me rudely, but I've seen the way they talk to other men in the company and they do not talk to them as rudely. A lot of it comes from me just being young, me being at a certain level. Even though I am at a higher level than them, they don't think I'm at a high enough level, or because I'm a woman, or because they just don't think I know enough. Why are you assuming I don't know enough just because I'm a woman or I'm young, you know? And I've had that issue several times in my line of field, especially because respect is so hard to come by when people just don't know it. And, you know, you have to fight a war every day when it comes to respect.
100%.
And I have to share a story. Yeah, I have to share a story that one of the principals in my company shared, in one of, like, you know, it, just diversity and inclusion is such a big topic right now that I'm sure all corporate world, non-corporate worlds are just talking about it to make sure that everybody's feeling included and accepted. And so she was sharing in one of these meetings about, and she's a principal, right? So that's one of the higher levels, highest levels in my company that she can get to. And she's been with the company that I work for like, I don't know, 34 years, like a long time. And she was talking about how different it was back in her day. She was basically, you know how we talk about, oh, work-life balance, and we're always crying about how it's not even and all this stuff. And she was talking about how in one of her reviews back in the day, she was point blank written communication and verbal communication that you giving priority to your kids and house is what's holding you back in the company, and it's not acceptable. That was, probably different terms, but that was the gist of it. And it was funny that, like, her boss used to give her massages on her shoulders at like company, like meetings and such, and think, oh, you look tense, let me massage you. Do you think that's appropriate? And I was just like, oh my gosh, we are so blessed in the sense that at least we don't face so much racial inequality, you know, and it's not okay for somebody to just approach us and start freaking massaging your shoulders. So we're so blessed in that way. But then the other thing that comes from that sort of experience is some sort of, like, you know, you develop this like blanket immunity towards everything and anything. And then she was talking about another episode where they were going to hire this, or they were looking at hiring a candidate, a male candidate for a position who seemed to be, you know, excellent at whatever needed to be done. But one of the other interviews, panelists brought up this issue where he had actually written various, I don't know if it was slurs, but it was pretty derogatory towards women, like just language in a published book. And that was just like, and that the principal that I'm talking about, she was just like, oh, it's not a big deal, whatever, I'm used to it. And then she like thought about it and realized, well, just because I faced it back in the day doesn't mean, you know, I have to have the people who are now working under me or by me face the same issues, especially since I can control it. And that's such a good attitude to have. Like a lot of the people, a lot of the women even, who have been in the industry for so long, don't realize that just because they faced it doesn't mean we have to face it. Unless they change something, nothing's going to change in the future. So I'm talking about them. A lot of these people in the past did do that change, which is why we are able to live in this. And it's up to us to continue the change and make it even better for the women, women of color, everybody, you know, to feel included and, you know, just move forward and grow as a community to be just accepting of everyone.
That's what I say. We are a blessed generation, how things are given to us. So in a format where things are evolving and people are at least talking about it. Like one of the founders of my previous company, she told me how when she started, there was no pumping room in the office and she had to actually put up a place for it because it was the need of the hour and she had a baby. So these are things that, it was always a man's world, right? I mean, we can disagree about everything, but it started off as a man's world. The task force and the working hours of 40 hours per week were defined thinking about a man's capability of going in, working for 8 hours and coming back home and eating food and just relaxing. I mean, it was never accounted for that the same man is going to come back home and, you know, cook and to take care of kids and things like that. So there is a dynamic of the society that is moving forward towards, oh, we should all be equal, we should all have equal workforce, but then sometimes the roles and the responsibilities have to also change at the personal front. So I think we are still all struggling to make that adjustment. At least we are going in the right direction. Women are only holding that change, I feel. I think women are much in the right
spot. Yeah, I agree. I remember like when I used to play tennis tournaments back in the day, obviously boys and girls used to be a different draw of matches. And their prize money would always be split. So boys would always get more money than the girls. And it used to be so annoying because we were all spending as many, like 7 days for the tournament. We were also traveling and going. And then girls always got less money. So I think our state was the one of the very few states, Maharashtra state, was at that point started equalizing the prize money based on the point system and all. And like eventually, I mean, even in the tennis world and Grand Slams and all, there was this big controversies between why men used to get more prize money than women at that point, because they had a point that men brought a lot more audience than women, you know. But the second Serena Williams got into the picture, and it was like she was capable enough to beat all the men out there, and the public was coming for her. So it was there's actually a really good movie about it by Billie Jean King. She was one of the greatest legends in tennis, and of the whole controversies about how like tennis players, women and men, kind of get paid equally now. But in terms of sponsorship world now, like, you know, all the big companies and your people, things have changed quite a bit because now women are coming more forward, I guess. That was a big thanks to Sania Mirza and Saina Nehwal from India, you know, at that point where because of them, I think it changed a lot, at least in the Indian sports world.
I think it's all across the world that like girls are now having good examples to look up to. Like we grew up in this ambiguous world where, you know, okay, everybody is doing their thing. But I was reading Indra Nooyi's biography the other day. She came to the US, studied in Yale. She was wearing sari all the time. She did not know how to figure out things. And she worked her way up where she is. That diligence and that kind of tenacity, those are the things that we are seeing now. Those are the things we are actually looking forward to. These are the women who are actually paving way for us. So just after Indra Nooyi, I think so many women CEOs and so many women leaders, I think General Motors has their CFO who's a lady, Citibank has a CEO who's a lady. So all these big corporate giants are incorporating these changes, right? Women are working towards it. Women are proving that they can be there. And I think that is helping generations of ours actually take some good momentum. I think we are one of the lucky ones.
recently heard a speech by Disney CEO. I think she's the CEO. It's a lady, right? I forget her name now. But she gave a really cool presentation on, and it was like based on Star Wars. She made it really, like, she's such a good talker, and it was such a cool, it was actually Women in STEM, the Society of Women Engineers, the SWE conference. It was at one of those, and she was just giving her life background about how she's doing, what she's able to do. And she gave such a great example of how it doesn't have to be, you know, the woman's at home, you know, taking care of kids, cooking food, all that stuff, and the man's working. Because in her situation, her husband's kind of like was a stay-at-home dad for several years until they could figure out, until the kids were older and such. And, you know, you hardly see that, you know, right? Where the woman is, either both of them are working, which is common now, but you hardly ever see a situation where the woman is the one going out and doing the work and bringing in all the bread, winning bread for the family, and the husband's the one taking care of kids. And I thought it was amazing. And I actually recorded it and sent it to my husband, because he's always talking about how he doesn't want to work and he wants me to work all the time. And he can just sit at home and like do whatever he wants, just keep going to school. And that's like his ideal life. Which just speaks of like how far we've come along, where it was back in the day a taboo for a man to not work and support his family. And now it's, you know, that's what they dream of, you know? So.
I swear, I think both my husband and your husband have talked about it. They're like, you know, just go do it. I'm happy to chill at home. I just don't feel, they're like, just go do it. I'm happy. They gave me, my husband the other day gave me a number. This, the day you reach this number, I'm happy to just sit back at home. I don't care. I'm all for STEM.
I wanted to ask you both this thing. You both know that I worked in the IT field for like 6 months, right? And that was my first experience working off of the tennis court. And it was mainly because I was transitioning from one place to another. And it was a really nice part-time job, but I only worked for like 6 months barely. And it was all work from home. I never met my people except my boss. He was a male boss who was very nice. But with the women I dealt with on the phone who were supposed to be my team, the only thing, I have a very bitter memory of that job, by the way. I love my boss to death and he was a great person. But overall, I felt like insecurity in women was like, I was shocked because some women were like twice my age and some women were like, you can call me, I was a kindergarten of IT. Like that was my knowledge when I stepped into it. And the very first thing I was like, oh my gosh, like what is wrong with her? You know, why is she treating me like a baby or, you know, asking me questions that my mom has never asked me before, you know, or like, who am I talking to or what am I doing on the thing? So I felt like a lot of micromanaging, but it was all along the lines of insecurities. So do you girls ever feel that? Or have you dealt with something?
I'll start with one answer. One of the previous companies I was working at, somebody actually told me that, oh, you got this job because you're a woman. So we actually work in such an environment where people think we got a particular job only because we are a woman. So women, I think that we should actually do one more episode about women bosses and women managers and how this bitchiness goes around. it's like, I think they try double as hard as men to kind of keep proving their point. And that's what just keeps this insecurity going. And I have seen it, I've observed it. I sometimes feel, what if I am guilty of doing something like this in future? I actually do feel that because we are in that environment. Like, what if I am as bitchy as some of the lady managers I've seen around? But that's just, I think it's going to take time, but it's a very common practice for interior
talent. It's just, I don't know, it's like a bad. It's an instinct thing. It's a personality thing. But a woman can be your best friend, but a woman can be the worst enemy too. And it's really true, because they can just, you know, women can really help you, you know, rise together like all of us are doing to each other. But there are women who literally fight their way to just bring you down. There are so many women who do that. And unless we decide, you know, we create room for each other to grow and to thrive in, there's no future for us if we keep doing these little, especially back in India, I remember I've never worked in the Indian corporate world and I'm glad for it. But, you know, my older sister did when I was in college. And she used to tell me stories about how like people were just insecure. There'll be women who just thought she was prettier and that's why the boss favored her and things like that. And it was just so trivial. I was like, it's really not true. And in a country in India, country like India, it happens way more often than you would think. And it's just so pathetic. And it's women bringing them down. Women are gossiping about you behind your back to other people. And that's what, you know, one thing leads to another. And there's misunderstandings. And, you know, it's so easy to judge a character in one of the meetings that I've had. It's when a man says it, it's statement. It's even an order if it is. But when a woman says it, she's just a bitch. You know, it's so easy. The same thing that a man says, the same thing that a woman says. It does happen. It has happened to me. I'm like, I come off, honestly, I have a strong personality and I come across as bitchy. And I know that. So I've been working all this time to just work on my, you know, the rough around the edges kind that of a man had, but I've been completely acceptable. It's not okay for a woman to have. So that's another struggle I've had over the, not that I'm saying that's acceptable, but it doesn't mean I'm a bitch. I'm just, I know what I want to get done and I want you to get it done. That's it. So it's just really hard for women to just be affirmative and strong without looking weak and still get your point across, right? How do you do that without being enforceful? And, you know, especially in the corporate world, it's completely different.
You know,
it's a continuous struggle.
Yeah. Manasi, it's the same in the tennis world too, because a lot of times female coaches, and it's a common perception for a lot of parents sometimes, is if they have a boy, right, coming to play tennis, doesn't matter what age, they're always thinking of, especially 12 and over boys, they're always thinking that a female coach is not strong or disciplined to teach a boy. So no matter how qualified or you could be the best Grand Slam player, you know, or best player out of your country, but they will still have this question that how are you going to teach my boy? So it's so funny. And this normally comes after 12 and over boys, in which I get a point, you know, because the age difference is not that far apart, you know, with everyone and understanding and kids adulting so soon these days. But a lot of people also see it as a perk, especially in the tennis industry, because all the clubs lately prefer at least one or two female coaches, only because there are younger kids. And just that instinct that a female brings, a male cannot bring. It's that motherly instinct that, you know, we as women bring that men cannot. Like, it's very, at least I've never seen that. I don't know if you guys have. I mean, Manasi, you teach younger kids, and I'm sure you feel the same way.
Well, that's the thing with dance. It's completely different, I think. I can teach, they prefer a woman teacher for a girls team because there are some moves that most men, even being dancers, can do. A lot of men now can. You know, they're flexible certain ways and women just bodies are flexible. So I teach women in all age levels and there's never been any issues. The issue is when I have to teach a boys class or an older boy class. So generally the younger boys, it's okay to teach, but the older ones, honestly, I don't even want to teach because it's impossible. They're at that age where it's just, I don't know how you deal with it, Farija, but at least the ones who come to dance, more often than not, they're being forced to come to dance. So they just do everything in their power to not make you feel comfortable at all. So I actually refrain from doing, you know, boys classes, consider there a little bit of inequality on my part. But honestly, you need such a sugar rush to be able to match their energy levels. It's just a whole different world when it comes to dancing.
So I'll give you another perspective from a corporate world. So I've always gotten a feedback where people have told me, Aisha, don't raise your hand, just speak up and speak loudly, because I'm like this nice, polite person and they think that the room full of men will not be able to hear me out. So there have been instances where people have told me to, you know, just go fight, scream it out. And I don't know. Yeah. So I hear you girls when you say it's all about that energy level you need to show sometimes.
Oh yeah, I agree. Like I remember when sometimes I teach adult classes and I always prefer to, so it's like sometimes it's women only and sometimes it's men only, but I always prefer mixed or men only because I don't know, I feel like as a female it's easier to teach men than women. So my coach, it was so funny, my coach in college, one of the coaches coached both boys and the girls team, so we had just one coach. in between us. And he always said that it's so tough to manage 8 girls than to manage 20 boys, because it's just so much drama between girls. And it's just unnecessary drama that has nothing to do with what you're supposed to do or what you're expected to do.
Parita, Shreya is going to agree with you so much, because she used to lead her basketball team and she would pull her hair in the end. She's like leading an all-women team. Oh God, it's difficult.
Yeah.
But another thing I wanted to talk about was just like the, you know, we are starting to see a lot of women CEOs and women in just like higher capacity roles. But we did a survey within our company where we were, we kind of mapped out just, you know, where women are or where did they tend to leave and what age groups they're focused in. And we found that within our company, at least, we generally have a pretty decent distribution of women to men, considering, you know, our industry is just so different. But as soon as we reach a certain level, like, you know, like the PM level, senior PM level, a lot of women tend to trail off. And that higher, the higher end of the spectrum is all occupied by men. And it's not, it was observed, at least that it was at least noted that it wasn't really due to them not having enough opportunities. They said that they just ended up quitting either to care for children or just, you know, switching jobs. But they didn't tend to stay as long as men did to be able to even climb the ladder that far up. And so, I mean, it was just interesting to me that, I mean, it does make sense, right? Especially if you tend to have children, your focus shifts, or if you're just not comfortable in a cutthroat industry, like consulting is, a lot of people just move to like a, you know, more ease, like, you know, more 9-to-5 type of jobs. Cause in consulting, you can't have a 9-to-5 job. Most of the jobs nowadays in the corporate world are just not 9-to-5, but people prefer that more like government jobs or like more stable jobs where you can work those hours and not have to fight for that work-life balance, even though I think it's a pretty good deal. But I can imagine if you know somebody had kids and stuff, it gets hard to balance. So that was something that was noted, and you know, they're working to kind of make that flexibility. One of the things they did that I thought was amazing was we actually have a pretty good maternity leave program now, which was, I mean, it's still, you know, compared to Europe, like nothing, but they increased, just because of all the feedback they received from, you know, the employees, the employers actually increased their maternity leave time, which I thought was amazing, that at least they're listening, you know, at least change is happening, that, you know, you're getting full pay for a longer period of time, not just because of the state mandate, but because the employee interest. I mean, they're just trying to make themselves look good and obviously, you know, make everybody happy and make sure that everybody comes to work for them. But still, I think it's a great step towards doing it. And I'm glad they're doing it. But do you guys see anything like that within, you know, I'm sure tennis is kind of like that too, because, you know, it just gets hard to keep up with that physical activity as you grow older, women or not. And women just tend to, you know, physically kind of deteriorate, unfortunately, sooner
Something
than
about
men.
Tennis, I loved this when Serena Williams was coming back to work and how those posters were put up to welcome her. I think that was a cute thing. But for
That was really cute. Yeah. Tennis world is a little bit different because there are not that many full-time employees working at a club. So normally when you work in tennis, you're always working like part-time somewhere. And then you make your way around by doing private lessons and stuff like that. So if you've been with the club or if you're the owner of the club, yeah, maternity leave is all yours. But for the most part, it's pretty much like, yes, you have to take a break for like 6 months or, you know, whatever the break is required. There are very like rare clubs, I guess, all over the world who you can work full time and offer like a proper package and 401ks and all of that stuff. But for the most part, unfortunately, it's just a complete break, which I kind of see it in a positive way, because at least you are like, fine, you know, you're going to take a break, heal yourself completely, and then come back in full swing. But there's always an opportunity here to at least like stand back on your feet, no matter where. You can start with like 5 hours a week or 10 hours a week. You don't need to, I mean, I don't think it's that hard to like find at least a part-time job in tennis.
I'll speak about tech. Tech, I think, has been doing great about pushing women. There's like a big movement where there is this women in tech and then there is mommies in tech, because you should go through the pregnancy, enjoy it full on, and come back and be able to, you know, secure your job. Facebook, for example, actually included a good paternity leave policy. I think it's 4 months for both mother and father. If I remember Mark Zuckerberg, when they got pregnant, he made that change company-wide. So many different companies in corporate world are incorporating different changes. There are good Netflix, for example, I think has 1 year. I can verify and put the numbers there. So companies are adopting these changes, but at the same time, they're making the workplace so much more comfortable for women. There is this program of flex scheduling where you can work from home for a certain time. I have known women who have given birth, who've had issues, but have had secured their jobs and be able to work from home while taking care of their babies. I think after post-COVID, that's going to become another big norm, right? So flex scheduling has been one. And a lot of companies I know have started these back to task force program where, okay, even if you've taken a break as a woman, just to do your maternity duties and just having a baby, they're running these, like you had great graduate trainee programs where you join a company as a graduate and you learn to work. You actually come back to task force after a certain break, they train you and they get you ready. So many initiatives I personally am aware of where women are just getting these new chances to come back to the task force. So very, very blessed to be part of the tech world.
And I feel like it's a perk of living in a developed country like USA. I can't imagine something like this already being implemented in India or any country of Southeast
India
Asia.
India actually has a 6 months of maternity policy. So India changed the policies a few years ago. I wouldn't say it has completely changed, but there is a lot. Because, see, tech that comes from US trickles down to South Asian countries, and especially India. So the IT world somehow remains the same. And although US gives you 12 weeks of paid maternity leave, India actually gives you 6 months. So yeah, everybody's trying hard.
Wait, I didn't know 6 months was actually paid in India. I thought it was, oh, that's pretty cool.
I think the government offices pay it. Some corporate worlds obviously pay it, but smaller firms do not pay it. But that's the same here. Even your disability insurance pays here if your company does not. Big tech companies always pay for that. It's the same, yeah.
Hey, all these tech mommies come to me for mommy and me class after they've had their babies.
That's so cute.
I actually followed this woman. She had a full article going about her pregnancy during her tech world. And Forbes actually does a big section about how it does 13:30 and 14:40, all those series. They actually do mommies back to work and things like that. So it's actually interesting how how media is bringing this up so much more. I mean, look at this. We are all in US. Kamala Harris is going to be our first ever vice president, right? Yesterday, I was reading that Twitter was going on with a debate. Okay, what should be the handle of Kamala Harris's husband? It's going to be the second mad second gentleman. Yeah, and I think they settled on with the second gentleman. But it's interesting because there is this positive change towards a bigger good. You know, eventually we'll have a first lady who's, we'll have a woman president, then I don't know how that first gentleman would be called. We'll see.
But Kamala Harris is just such a great inspiration for us all, being a woman of color, whether you agree with their political inclinations or not, it is still a great achievement to have had. And, you know, that these are the kind of women that are, you know, paving our way. And I hope, you know, we can do the same in some way or form or shape to do for the next generation. And I'm always trying to, like, volunteer or things like that at work. Like I'm one of the leads for the Women in Leadership. We have a community or committee for women in leadership, and we put together meetings and just material to help people out, to help women kind of grow and foster. And I feel like this is kind of like my legacy. This is what I'm going to leave behind, not just, you know, everything I do, but I want to be able to create a better world, an even better world than what I have had, and not have them face even the little bit of issues that I faced being a woman of color here. So it's incredible the world that we're living in, but there's still, you know, ways for us to go.
I think just because we know what our previous generations faced, we feel so blessed and we feel like, oh, this is great. But I think coming generations will be like, oh, you guys don't have this figured out. I hope for that to become a normal where people understand that is, because right now, even today, we make adjustments. We just compromise at so many fronts, right? There will be a time when people will be like, okay, maybe you guys are thinking about something wrong. It should not be the normal thing.
A lot of it also changed after that Me Too movement.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, I thought like women started coming out more, and there's this different confidence in women just like arose out of nowhere, which is really positive to see. So
I see men scared too, you know. Like one of my friends, so one of those couples I know, they both were dating in the same company but different org, so that was like, you know, an okay thing. But because they would talk to each other so much, the guy's manager told him that, you know what, don't do this. What if there's a Me Too movement and this girl goes and complains against you?
Yeah, we just have to be sensitive towards these things. Just the fact, whether they're afraid or whether they're doing out of, you know, just sheer being a good person, I'm glad they are doing it, because it's not, you know, you're not going to get away with it anymore, whatever it is. So I'm glad that came up, and I'm glad a lot of other things came up. And people are learning, and I'm glad they're learning.
Workplace harassment is a thing, and people are, like, as part of our onboarding, we are always taught about it. I have personally seen that change from 6-7 years ago when I had actually started working as an intern, and how my onboarding process has changed, where they particularly tell me this exactly means workplace harassment, this is sexual harassment, and this is when you raise your voice. So I think things are changing. This will keep going.
Yeah, and a good thing to remember is workplace harassment doesn't have to be just sexual, you know, no. Like respect, you know, just being professional towards each other. That's another form of harassment. Emotional harassment, I think, is way high up than, you know, compared to like sexual harassment, because people know you'll get punished and reported for sexual harassment. But emotional harassment is what gets kind of bypassed. And that's what needs to be brought to attention to, whether, you know, whether it's a woman on women, women of color, whatever be the issue, because it's, you know, it could be racial. It could be gender-based, or it could just be age-based, if that's a thing too. So
yeah, I've seen a lot of women cry. So that is, I think that is the majority of that. Yeah, that forms the majority.
And that's the other thing, you know, for a woman to cry, because I know, like, for me, a natural reaction to anger is I start crying. But just because I'm crying doesn't mean I'm weak. You know, it just takes me longer to, you know, communicate my thought, but I'm going to make sure it gets done. And that comes off as a sign of weakness, you know, to a lot of people. Oh, she's crying. She's like a little weakling. Oh, no, buddy, you'll see it. Let me just get past my tears. So stuff like that. If people still, you know, look at you like you're a weak little girl just because you cry, it's like, it's not a big deal anymore. It's just it's just a form of way to express yourself nowadays.
Yeah, I know. I think we should do a part two of this one, where we can talk about workplace harassment and some of our examples of how we have dealt with it. There is a lot that we can cover, especially with being women in color, with women of color in the task force. But I think let's stop it right here. We'll all see you guys next time. We have a lot more to talk, but guys, stay safe out there. Like, subscribe, and leave us a comment of what you thought about this episode. Thank you. Bye.